All right, we're going to get started here. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Transportation Committee meeting of Wednesday, January 29th, 2025. The time is 5 minutes after 3 o'clock, and we are in room 1100 of the Minnesota Senate building. A quorum is present. Today, members, we are going to hear the last of our three presentations on the proposed governor's slash agency budgets. Today we're going to be hearing from the Metropolitan Council. That's the extent of what we'll be hearing. No bills and no reports otherwise today. With that, Chair, anything? All right, we'll get rolling here, and I'll invite Chair Zelli to the table and whomever else you'd like to bring forward. Welcome, Chair Zelli. Please introduce yourself and then proceed as you see fit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, and Mr. Chair, Senator Jasinski. It's great to see you and committee members, and it's my honor to be presenting on behalf of the Metropolitan Council. I am the chair, and I'm joined by Ryan O'Connor, who's the regional administrator, and Hannah Pallmeyer, who done such a great job yesterday running the finding the slides. And but I also, with us, are a host of Met Transit, Met Council leaders who I won't introduce them all, but when we come to questions, and we have a lot of subject experts here if you want to go into detail. And I have a number of slides, which you may have had in advance, but I will, intention is to kind of walk through those. We have three or four fundamental kind of governor requests, and then we are certainly welcome to stand for any questions you have on the program we have with Metro Transit and transportation generally. First off, there's three requests as part of the governor and lieutenant governor's budget program, the first is authorization to advance funds to MnDOT. This relates to a program for MnDOT reconstructing a roadway, and then our interest in constructing a transitway. Also, we have a kind of a fare program which has worked really well for Metro Mobility riders to take our regular route transit network. And then the reduction of our general fund allocation. So I'll get into the detail on those three items. And I appreciate those that are on the Capital Investment Committee yesterday. We spoke initially about that, but I'm happy to go into more detail today. It's authorization to advance funds to MnDOT. I have to say that this is not something that is part of a normal activity for this agency. It is more a confluence of projects, cash flow opportunity, really an innovative means to advance two projects which if they happen simultaneously, could be a lot more efficient, a lot less disruptive, save the taxpayers funding, and frankly, advance a really important transitway connection sooner than if we had to wait. The idea to get authorization is a near term, not long term, reserve that Met Council is accumulating that we would allow MnDOT to use to complete a highway project. And those being that it would also be closely coordinated with our ABRT construction. And as I know you committee members know, our major transitways involve total construction, like what's happening with the Gold Line. Certainly that's a busway. Obviously the Green Line extension, other major projects involve the total cost of a project, including any substructures. The the benefit of these arterial bus rapid transit projects is they're on existing roadways, but they do involve upgrades of stations, upgrades to traffic lanes, but it becomes a much less cost project when we are able to avail ourselves of an existing roadway. Well, when that roadway is really in tough shape, and I know this from my experience at MnDOT, that those roadways that are nearing the end of their useful life, they become a very significant maintenance burden with potholes, with constant moderate repaving. And so a total reconstruction lasts a long time, and the process itself is pretty disruptive. And we know that thinking about the E-Line, the reconstruction happening along Hennepin Avenue right now is also a major transit way. The fact that those are being built at the same time means that it's disruptive once every 30 years or 40 years, not once, and then the road is broken up again several years later. The fact that the MnDOT is able to advance this work earlier with the cash flow, on a cash flow basis, of what we're able to provide actually makes that project a little less expensive because the cost of construction seems to be going up higher than the regular inflation rates. So a delivering project sooner actually brings it in at a lesser cost, not to mention the less construction disruption, as well as I mentioned, the savings on maintenance repairs. So this is an innovative idea. I do want to stress that this is funds that are important to Met Council. We are collecting a reserve that will be used later for capital maintenance. We have a forecast and analysis to show when those funds will be needed. So it really is a time period of 5 to 7 years, not 30 years. This is a very much in the next 10-year kind of outlook, and one that, because it's in the near term, we feel fairly confident in its ultimate use of these funds for us, but the fact that we can avail ourselves in the near term. So we're happy to answer more questions about that later, unless you want to stop now, but we can go to our next items.
We can keep rolling.
Okay. All right. The next proposal is for free fares on our regular route transit network for those Metro Mobility riders who are qualified for Metro Mobility service. We actually had a pilot program, and we have some numbers to show you in a minute, but this service turned out to be a great benefit for our Metro Mobility customers because it allowed them at times to have more personal freedom, more spontaneous trips, and actually saved the state funds because the cost of an individual Metro Mobility ride is much more expensive. And actually, when you count that a lot of our fixed route system is operating anyway, it allowed to kind of free up those Metro Mobility buses and service. So given that it's completely voluntary, we were impressed and actually realized that we should be doing this on a permanent basis. The council voted on a temporary basis to reduce the fares for Metro Mobility customers down to 1 cent. So that is not a typo. That is a one penny ride. We take a lot of ribbing about that, but it really is by statute what we can do. And we know we're not trying to be clever. We just want to allow this to happen during this first half of this year. And then seek permission to make it more of a real free service, which is, you know, our intention. The next slide, you can see how on a month-to-month basis, how, as the word got out, more of our Metro Mobility customers availed themselves of this service, and really nearly 75,000 free fares is not insubstantial. And I think that we have not a perfect science, but we can certainly make the case that this undoubtedly saves the state funds for the support of Metro Mobility. It certainly is not a, we feel confident to say it is not a cost to providing free fares. And then just jumping to the third item is reducing funds. You will not often see a commissioner or a cabinet member come forward and advocating a reduction in revenue for important service. But for the additional funds that the legislature has authorized for Metro Transit, 2 years ago, we would not be able to sustain a reduction in general fund support for rail operations. But it is completely fungible. It really is the money that comes to us for our system. I will say that it will certainly impact in the long term the funds that would be helpful as we want to expand even additional ABRTs or transit ways or frequency of our service. But in the near term, we believe it does not have a negative impact on our operations or our aspirations. We are now in a position to increase our frequency, our service. We are opening 3 new transitways this year. One major one, the Gold Line in March, 2 more ABRTs, the B Line and the E Line. And that will, of course, require additional operating expenses. However, we have the resources to do that under our existing diversified stream of revenue. And the other thing I'd say is our Network Now program, which is increasing frequency beyond just those new transit ways, the idea is to make a really viable, interconnected transit system work well. We're very cognizant of a reduction in funds. We have to take seriously. We are being very mindful that we need to be prudent with the resources we have. Which gets less publicity, although it's certainly known that we are looking at, and most of these are suburban express routes, we look at routes which we are eliminating entirely because they don't have the ridership or the market interest to be supported. So although we are expanding, we want to make sure we are looking at every run and every dollar to make sure that we're being smart, prudent, and thoughtful with taxpayer funds. As a cabinet member, I would say that I'm fully aware of the stresses on the general fund, particularly in the outer biennium period of time, next biennium. And so we know that the governor has to make trade-offs, and so choosing this reduction to this agency is one that we accept and we can manage without compromising the integrity of our operations. Obviously, it's come with much excitement, and many of our advocates and those that we serve are not thrilled, but we can make the case that it is prudent and acceptable at this time. So with that, we do want to add one additional item that is beyond our those initial 3, and that is not one that has any budgetary impacts, but relates to expanding what's called the RALF program. This is a right-of-way acquisition loan fund that Met Council manages to in order for local communities to acquire a highway right-of-way. And at times that MnDOT nor council or other entities are able in before a project reaches a certain point, allows you to kind of get actual land in advance of projects. It has been very successful in the past, And in talking to, particularly to many of our exurbs, communities really have the opportunity to add to their regional parks. And we believe we can manage this program by expanding the authority of the Ralph program to include parkland and park and trail land and still sustain the interest in our highway programs. And these are generally loan funds, and the funds are paid back, but it really is a support of our major constituency, which are cities and townships. And this is a request that we've gotten in a number of cases, and I can point to examples in Scott County where there's been a real interest, and we think we can stitch together some of these programs to help serve those communities well. And I don't know if Regional Administrator, do you want to add anything to that or anything else I've said?
I'll just wait until questions. Okay. Mr. Chair, I think you did a great job.
Well, those are the overview, and we are ready to stand for questions.
So if I could ask you to add one more just brief overview of what you'll be requesting from capital investments in the bonding bill, the $15 million for bus rapid transit.
Sure.
Capital.
Thanks. Well, we appeared yesterday with a request for $50 million as part of the capital request for our Ontario bus rapid transit, ABRTs, which I just referred to. The we have a number that are being operated, three, the A line, the C line, the D line. The B line's about, will be opening up in June. The E line will opening up in December. We have several under that are funded and under planning and nearing construction. The H line, which is not fully funded, operates from downtown Minneapolis, mostly on Como Avenue, as far east as Sunray Shopping Center. We have about $60 million of that line has been secured through both federal funds, $25 million from regional solicitation, and then some funding from some past funding support. We believe that the additional $15 million from the state would allow us to continue working through the Small Starts program, perhaps get full federal funding to complete that H line. And what really helps, even though that construction period would be in the years 28-29, is having those funds secured earlier allows us to keep that queue of one or more, this year it's two, ABRTs as we develop that system. I think the question is we're reducing our general fund request for operations and yet continuing to request funds for capital support. And I think that the part of how we have conceived this network as we build it out with the legislature and with our partners, that the initial capital costs of these projects really be a mix of local, state and federal funds, and then we have, through our sources of revenue, are taking on the responsibility for operations as well as a number of programs, including the capital maintenance repairs, which will be significant in the future. So it's important, I think, to put it in the context that we are requesting some modest capital support for that ABRT program. There are more ABRTs in the future. We also made requests for our INI program, which is the infiltration to help give grants to communities to repair the leakage that's in those stormwater pipes and the wastewater pipes. But to we also requested funds for our regional park system, which is really distributed among 10 implementing park agencies that actually support as many as 55 regional parks. The Met Council matches $2 for every $3 on that program, roughly $5 million in total, but a $2.3 million request. So those are the three requests for the Capital Committee, but the transportation one was ABRT.
Thank you, Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Might I ask a question?
Absolutely. We're at the question-asking moment now.
Okay,
so,
great. Yes. Well, it's on the last slide that you have up here, and it has to do about expanding the right-of-way acquisition loan fund to include regional parks and trails. I'm a huge supporter of regional parks and trails, no doubt about that. But I do have a question. If you were to expand, if this were granted, and you were able to expand the right-of-way acquisition loan fund to include regional parks and trails, would they, so currently my understanding is right-of-way acquisition funds does not, it has condemnation authority. In other words, if you need a piece of land for some sort of transportation, there is condemnation authority. However, parks and trails do not have condemnation authority. And we've run into some problems with MnDOT and legacy funds, for example. Legacy funds are used for a trail. They're putting it beside Highway 22, for example, and suddenly the legacy funds, because they're being called considered in conjunction with a highway fund, they have condemnation authority. And so I don't think anyone ever intended that for legacy funds, but that's what's happening, Commissioner. Mm. And I would hate to see something like that happen if this were approved. And I think it'd be very important to make, if that was not your intention, I think it would be very important to make sure that the law is very clear that even if you were to use these expanded right-of-way acquisition loan funds for a regional park or trail, condemnation authority cannot be used when using those funds. So I want to get your insight on both the items that I mentioned. Using the legacy funds in conjunction with a highway reconstruction and claiming having condemnation authority, and then what I mentioned here.
Yeah.
Chair Zilli.
Senator, I will speak generally as I understand it, and I can be corrected by some experts, but I believe the condemnation authority would not come from that council. It would be more of the entity that, in the case of MnDOT, or a local community that has those rights. This program would be to support those communities rather than be involved in the project itself. And I think that the park plans that I've learned about were not ones that were being adverse acquisitions. They were more about buying opportunities, farmland, others that were a bit available. But I, and maybe Ryan can add to this, I think the intention, and I agree, we should make sure that the legislation is appropriately crafted, that is really there to support opportunities rather than to create another problem.
Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator, for the question, thank you. So in the conversations, this is one of those bottom-up proposals that has come through conversations with our municipal partners across the region and an ask for a gap in what they often see, which is the rate at which the opportunity can become available through something like farmland going up for sale is quicker than their ability to cobble together resources to sometimes think about the long-term connectivity or expansion of parkland in an area. Never in those conversations did this particular dynamic come up. So the point is well taken. And the chair's point about it being something where the local entity would actually be the one acquiring the land would be the piece to think about as we think about condemnation conversations. It's not the Met Council that would be in a spot to be acquiring the property themselves. We just provide the financing mechanism through the revolving loan to be able to enable it to occur.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up. Well, I'm sure when the legacy funds were put in place, no one ever intended, because the law is very clear that legacy funds for these types of trails do not have condemnation authority. But somehow, in the world we live in today, if they are beside a construction project that MnDOT is undertaking, in this case 22, suddenly they do have condemnation authority. So that's why I think that's wrong. I've tried to change that. That was never the intent of legacy funds, but you could save yourself a lot of potential concerns down the road if that were very clear in any legislation that you brought forward. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Zilli.
Senator Nelson, I think that we should take that under advisement. I think part of the benefit of the Ralph program is that it comes when there's not a project. And so I think sometimes what happens when legacy funds are involved in an existing MnDOT project, you're in the middle of some other combination. So I think that's just something we need to consider, and we will.
Thank you. Thank you. Further questions, members? Senator McKeown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation today. I'd like to just shift gears a little bit and ask you about something that is that I have heard a lot from my constituents about in the last 24 hours and have heard a lot of alarm and concern on a number of areas. So I'm wondering specifically about federal funding for your work. And in particular, maybe just to start, I'm wondering what percentage of your total funding comes from federal sources?
Chair Zilli.
Mr. Chair, Senator McKeown, this is something that certainly rattled us yesterday. We spent a lot of time thinking about it. And of course, we never know what will present us in any day. But I think our larger concern within the council related to the work we do with housing, with some other social service, with regard to transportation, we certainly are thinking longer term about some of the grants that we have received but not yet funded. They're not many of those. In terms of our formula funding, the actual operating funds that come from the Federal Transit Administration to support our transit network is I won't say it's modest, but it is relatively less than when you consider overall budgets. It's somewhere in the nature of $30 million. Now, I know that only because I asked the question about a half an hour ago. And I have some others who can give us more of a picture about that. Longer term, our federal funds, not just the capital programs, like the potential for a blue line in the future or but obligated existing transitways, we are very confident those are in place. There's by formula funds, there's a much more robust capital assistance we get from the Federal Transit Administration. Federal assistance meaning a 5307, which is providing funds for buses. And buses are increasingly more expensive, especially as they become electric buses. They're over $1 million. And so that's something that we can get you figures, and I've heard some, but they're big. So that's, we feel pretty confident, and I think some of our trade association or other transit agencies around the country feel more confident about formula funds for existing and ongoing operations than grants or future capital programs, future grant opportunities. So I think that's just giving you a very broad view, but really, we don't know. I don't pretend to give an expert, and I think that's just something we will continue to analyze and be thoughtful about in the future. Thank
you. Senator McKeown.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And just so just sort of getting in, I know we're all trying to get our minds around these numbers and the impacts of a potential freeze. And there is so much uncertainty. I know we've been following it today, and we went from a freeze to, oh, no freeze, and now we just heard from the press secretary for the White House, no, there is a freeze. It's changing from hour to hour, day to day. But I'm just wondering if we actually were to see a months-long pause or God forbid, a permanent cut to federal funding, what impact would that have on our transit funding stability, on the work that you are doing?
Chair Zilli.
Mr. Chair and Senator, that's a question we think every day. I will say that Minnesota benefits from having a very diversified portfolio of funding. And it's not just sales tax, it's not just some of the other fare funds, but motor vehicle sales tax is an example. Certainly, our federal partners have been really important. They are important for systems around the country of all states, not just by all political jurisdictions. So but I think that's just something we have to kind of continue to analyze and consider. Unless you want to add anything.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you. Senator, I'll just add a little bit of specificity to a couple spots. And I mean, the broad point being there's a lot of uncertainty, and something that comes down in at a broad brush is hard to interpret at a level of implementation. So with all those points, I would actually start, even though we're in a transportation committee, by citing that we run the region's largest Section 8 housing system through our HRA. Yeah. And that is the area that, from a federal side, there are not large reserves. That is a program that, like all providers, and I can say this on behalf of other providers in the region as well, that would be an immediate type of impact if we saw federal funding change. And that got clarified through the day yesterday, through the cadence that you were describing at one point, that HRA federal funds were not a part of the intended piece. At the beginning of the day, we did not know that. So I wanted to mention that. In the area of energy efficiency work, electrification, et cetera, grants and transit build out, there's both the long-term impacts of big capital projects often have a mix of funding sources that include federal. Those could be significantly impacted and could imperil projects to be delivered, period. And then there's also, though, areas where we've begun doing work and you're drawing down on existing awards. And so there's analyses going on about, like, what is the total exposure. But so there's kind of three categories. There's the things that you haven't actually gotten funding for but will enable you to build out in the way that up until now we thought we were playing by the correct federal guidelines. There's the part of drawing down existing funds for something you were already awarded. And there's that immediate piece that really begins to hit home first in a non-transportation area for the council.
Senator McKeon.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. Sometimes here in the Senate we talk about things and they sort of that it will affect service, or it will affect these things. And I think it's really important because the public does occasionally, maybe not often, but sometimes watch us here in committee and hear what public officials are saying about these things. And I think it's important to have some specificity about what that means when we say that a program would be affected. So I'm wondering, can you just, you did mention briefly that it could impact us being able to deliver these things at all. And so what we're talking about, my question for you is, how would it actually look to Minnesotans who are taking the bus, who are receiving housing, if that were to happen, a freeze, who are accessing the services that this agency is providing? What does that actually mean? Does it mean less services? Does it mean potentially no services? So, and that means, like, people who are depending on the bus to get to work can't get, they have to find another way to go. Like, I'm just wondering, can you provide us with a little more specificity about how this impacts the lives of Minnesotans, potentially?
Mr. O'Connor.
Mr. Chair, Senator, and part of the challenge with specificity in the near term is continuing the day-to-day work that the organization is doing to deliver today with the analysis of things that may or may not be clear at this point. So I do acknowledge the challenge on some. In those three categories, specifically going back to them, like in the Section 8 area, it would mean people not being able to have rent paid through the Section 8 program would be the risk that we are running. We do not carry reserves to continue that program for very long if the federal spigot were to be shut off for the funding, because it's a constant month-by-month piece. And that would impact provider. We're not unique in that as a Section 8 provider. That would be on behalf of the entire region would see similar things across the country. So that would be the real impact there, would be people would be in a spot where the funding they have relied upon to maintain housing could disappear. In the middle category, it's grants for electrification across our region, where we have been doing technical assistance work, and then we seek the reimbursement through the awarded grant. We know we have areas where that reimbursement may not come, which then requires the council to figure out how to readjust its budget that counted federal revenue coming in as a source of payment that would no longer come, which would mean we would either not do other work or we would go into reserves to pay back because the revenue would not materialize that the council had approved in its previous budget. And in the third category, in terms of large transit ways, whether it be ABRT or light rail extensions, et cetera, those projects would have to consider whether or not they could move forward and become viable projects at all, because your funding mix is reliant on having a 100% capital funded project to be able to move forward, and that would change the calculus for all partners involved.
Senator McCune.
Thank you, and I know this is a huge issue, so I only have one more question for now. Thank you for providing that extra specificity. But I am wondering, without federal funds, is the Met Council able to fulfill its federal designation as an MPO?
Mr. O'Connor, or Chair Zelli.
Mr. Chair, Senator, actually I have the person who manages our MPO. He might be able to give a better answer. But I think that to the extent that a metropolitan planning organization, one of its primary roles is to allocate federal funds on a solicitation basis, to the extent there are. If there were a world where there was no federal funds, I'm not sure that what the purpose of MPO is. So we're kind of in theoretical, that's my personal opinion. But I think that we always have to kind of deal with the world that is as currently constructed, and as it evolves, we will certainly have to adjust to take those new realities. And to follow up on what the regional administrator was describing, we don't want to minimize the impacts, the negative impacts that would occur with any disruption of funds. I mean, they're real, and we are very fortunate. We're more fortunate than other regions, but that doesn't mean that this is really would be very significant for the state of Minnesota in this region.
And I'll just say thank you for your responsiveness to Senator McCune's questions. You know, I texted Mr. O'Connor at about 9 a.m. yesterday morning asking, what does this mean? And his response was, we have no idea, we're trying to figure it out, and I appreciate that it's a lot. And it's changing, and you know, we're getting mixed messages and the like. I know I had sent the same text to Department of Public Safety as well as to MnDOT, and they're kind of in the same boat. They don't know quite what to make of all of this, and I know all of the executive branch agencies are trying to understand. And then we got what we thought was a rescission of the memo the memo, but the order stands. No one quite knows what that means. So when you're able to understand more fully the implications of what we're hearing from the federal administration, from the president, and are able to be more thorough in your response so that we can understand on behalf of our responsibilities to the people of Minnesota, we'd be most appreciative. Thanks. Yeah. All right. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll get off the national politics stage here. It's only been in 9 days, so we'll give things time to settle a little bit. I know it seems to be fun to talk about, but I think things will settle and we'll see what goes on. But my question is back to the Metro Mobility Riders or the regular route transit.
Is that a promise, by the way? Things will settle? All right.
That is.
Thanks. So we heard it here. All right. Thank you.
Sorry. Couldn't resist. So going to the free fares for the Metro Mobility, I think that's something that doesn't make sense, but you don't project how much savings you think you'll get by doing that. You know, you say the ridership's up, and I understand that, and you're at the 1 cent, and basically you want to do it for free now anyways, and you're doing us to get the approval at the 1 cent. But how much will this save in savings? What's the estimated amount in savings that this will project?
Chair and Senator Jasinski, I think while Ryan is checking to get the exact answer, I will say that it is very imperfect to do a forecast of what the savings are, but it makes a couple of different assumptions. And Carlson here is going to tell me if it's wrong, but the real question is how many trips on the scheduled route system are actually resulting in a not taken trip by that otherwise would have been taken by a Metro Mobility. And if we assume 25% diversion, in other words, 25 of those trips, They're not taking Metro Mobility vans. It is a break even. Now, that's roughly. So I'm going to say there's an upside to it, but I'm going to introduce my colleague, Charles Carlson, who's the executive director of our Metropolitan Transportation Services.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Carlson.
As the chair mentioned, yes, even a small fraction could result in a savings. We did track the number of rides taken. We were not able to track the trip purposes, or if you didn't take this ride, would you have taken the same trip on Metro Mobility? So unfortunately, we just don't have the inferences from the data we have to draw conclusions about how much money might the state save from this program. But we do know that if only a small fraction are instead of Metro Mobility, it is a net savings, because through this program, we observed no increased costs to Metro Transit programs. So really, it's just the reduction of revenue from $1 to $0, and then any diversion of trips. I think even at less than 25%, maybe 10% or less, would result in a net savings were that the case. But we don't have the data to back that up specifically at this point.
Senator Jasinski.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So then just to follow up. So you've not run the numbers. If it's a 10% or a 25%, what those numbers would be at all? So none of those numbers have been projected.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe we have of what that break even would be. I don't have it at my fingertips today, but it certainly is something we can follow up with quickly after the hearing.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you could send that to us, that'd be interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, I would echo that request, number one. Number two, I understand that the Metro Mobility certified rider can opt to take a ride. You know, it's by definition entirely voluntary. I would be interested in some more qualitative information around how many opt and for what reasons, and what is their general level of satisfaction with their mobility services when they have the opportunity to take either transit, you know, regular transit or Metro Mobility, if it presents an overall improvement to choices and options and, you know, access to where they need to go and when they need to go. Thank you.
Well, and Mr. Chair, if I might, sure. While Charles is here, he's done a really remarkable job to improve the services of Metro Mobility. So as we've renewed the fleet, which is almost an entire fleet addition this over 2 years, and as we kind of try to work on our customer service software, we're working on the ways, and this was subject to some hearings from last year. But it also comes at a time when we're building out the transit system. So as we build this ABRT network, as more transitways come online, there is accessibility. There's really great ABRT way to roll into a door of a bus that's not through the front. It doesn't take a driver to do a lift. It's just the system is becoming more accessible friendly. Not just accessible, easier to use. And I think that's really key, that we provide, you know, really following up on some of the Olmsted goals, was to kind of make more mainstream kind of opportunities. And I think that our whole system is really predicated on the idea to do that. And so this isn't to say it's supplanting Metro Mobility, but giving people options that are really high quality options, as well as trying to improve Metro Mobility itself. Is a really good combination.
Great, thank you. Questions, further questions, members? Senator Paugh.
Thank you, Chair. So just a follow-up to some of your questions there, I was thinking along the same lines, and one additional one is, have you actually done any kind of survey or feedback from riders who have optioned to do the free fares instead, to see if there is any physical accessibility issues or challenges that they have seen in writing this, or any issues that they've just encountered, just to kind of do some improvement as we look to say, yeah, let's do this on a regular basis, not just a pilot, but so just so that we can improve upon our services.
Well, while Charles
Chair Zilli
comes back, Senator, Mr. Chair and Senator Pai, I think that we are doing increased customer surveys about the quality of our customer experience on the Metro Transit system. This
Mr. Carlson.
This is special pilot, so Charles can answer.
Mr. Carlson, could you also formally introduce yourself just for the record? Yeah. We didn't get you to
Thank
do that
you,
last
Mr.
time.
Chair. Thanks. Charles Carlson, Executive Director of Metropolitan Transportation Services at the Metropolitan Council. We actually are preparing reporting right now. This proposal actually came from a legislative pilot that was passed in 2023. Preparing reporting for that's due to the legislature on February 15th. So reporting on that's underway includes feedback from riders, may not be Metro Mobility specific riders, but from a wide array of transit riders on the effects of free fare, as well as just their use of transit in relation to this program. So we're working on that reporting, and we'll have it to the legislature in a matter of weeks.
And members will distribute that report as soon as we get it. A and B will take a poll, see if you want to have a more formal presentation in committee at that time. All right.
Thank you.
Further questions, members? I have one. Oh, Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was a bit reticent to ask my questions because I'm probably going to look dumb. But being new on the committee, so I'm going to use that as an excuse all year, by the way. The slide you had about reducing the funds for rail operations by $32 million, I guess I have a number of questions in regards to that. First of all, this is a hopeful question. Does that mean that the trains are actually starting to break even or close to break even now, or there's funding from somewhere else? I'm guessing by the chuckle that I heard that maybe that's not true.
Chair Zelli.
Mr. Chair and Senator, there are no dumb questions. That's a really good question, and I think that if I kind of do a short history, that there was general fund support of the rail operations at a time when the counties were covering 50% of the operating costs of our Blue Line and Green Line and future light rail lines, and that the state was going to be covering the other 50%. Well, that was, even that $32 million fell short, but with additional funds provided by the metro-wide three-quarter sales tax, of which MetTransit gets 83% of that, and those funds are now used to cover what was covered by the counties and Metro Transit's obligations, plus additional costs like some of the bus operations, as well as capital maintenance and many other safety initiatives. So the answer is really those funds are fungible to our entire transit system, and probably the operating costs of rail operations now and in the future would be more than $32 million. But we do have a diversified set of revenue that have been able to cover those costs.
Just Mr.
O'Connor.
Just one point on that to add too, because I think this slide can be confusing by title about why rail operations, why not another area within the budget? And the answer is because statutorily the $32.45 million is dedicated to rail in the statute that allocated the general fund, and this is the general fund exposure in transportation for the Metropolitan Council.
So, Mr. O'Connor, before we go back to Senator Farnsworth, I'm just going to, I don't think that's actually the case. I'll ask Senate Council or our fiscal staff to clarify the general fund appropriation that we make for the Met Council. How do we characterize that when we adopt the budget, or at least when we adopt the 2023 budget?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm trying to pull up the last biennial budget because I can remember the exact wording, but I'm almost there. Okay. The base funding to Met Council from the general fund is for transit system operations under Minnesota Statute Section 473.371 to 449. I'd have to double check if where that falls, but and maybe you know off the top of your head, but we can check that for you.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator,
Chair Zilli.
I think that we have been thinking about this as general fund support of MetTransit in wherever it fits in the statute. I was through my memory trying to count on the history of why it was associated with rail operations, which is how we thought of it. I will say the person who would know this off the top of his head, many of you know Judd Shetnin. I'm sorry he's not here today. He had to be away to attend to some family obligations, but we can certainly get back to you with a legislative history and statute. And Senator, Mr. Chairman, you may be right. So we'll right. clarify that.
Well, I actually kind of knew the answer because I know we don't appropriate directly to rail operations because that would never survive the legislative process. Rail is a four-letter word at the legislature. So we just make an allocation to transit service and then kind of leave it up to Metro Transit to figure out exactly how to distribute their funds. And as we know, it all kind of goes into one big checkbook. All funds are fungible. So right. It may be how you think of those funds, but it is just kind of one big pot and that you decide for yourselves how to divvy up. So with that, Senator Farnsworth, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think my other questions have sort of been answered in that answer. Because I was wondering if that $32 million would then, if that was taken from the trunk highway or the general, but everybody keeps saying general fund. So then my assumption is then, and this is probably a question for Chair Dibble, this doesn't go to the trunk highway fund, then it will go to the general fund to deal with the deficit then?
I think that's the proposal on the part of the Met Council and the governor is just to simply send, about $65 million over the biennium just back to the general fund for the legislature to appropriate in other areas. Whatever those may be, not necessarily in the domain of this committee. And definitely not from or to the Trunk Highway Fund. Ne'er the twain shall meet. On that subject, members, I'll just call your attention. This isn't a hearing per se, but we did receive a written communication from signed by 13 organizations, which we included in your packets, so you can take a look at that. It's also been posted on the committee website. I did read through it. It did trigger a question for me, and that is, and it has to do with this issue of kind of fungibility and use of the dollars by Metro Transit, in which the contention is made that should this cut stand and be enacted by the legislature, it would undermine bus service operations and capital, harming service to bus riders as well as infrastructure for walking and biking. How would you respond to that criticism, that critique?
Mr. Chair and committee members, I believe that it would have an effect on our long-term funding plan. One of the questions, of course, is as we have additional reserves, we are proposing to advance reserves to MnDOT for a period of years. We are fortunate to have surplus funds during the next few years as we build out transit systems. And then as we approach the operating costs of new transit lines, as well as the capital maintenance costs, those funds are spent. So we know that the $30 million a year would not affect operations nor our plans over the next 10 years. As we think about adding and we do planning for additional transitways that aren't part of our current plan, it could affect that. It could affect some of the operating costs that we haven't seen. We know that we're investing a lot in safety and security in ways that hadn't been imagined 2 years, 3 years ago. But we're doing that, and I will say, just when you think about the fungibility and the operating costs, but for this sales tax revenue, we would be facing a couple hundred million dollar structural deficit. So, and that those structural deficits were covered over the past 6 years by federal relief that came as a part of the kind of the pandemic relief programs. It is really transformative. And thank you to the legislature, many of you here, who helped advance this funding formula with diversified funding that we can not only sustain current operations, but we actually plan for this network and how we sustain it over the next 25 years. So I have alluded to a report that we're doing that actually talks about sources and uses of funds over this 25-year period, which kind of shows how we are, by policy, dedicating funds to a certain kind of activity. And I think that idea of dedicating funds for capital maintenance, which is something near and dear to me, is important, because now is the time to ensure we have a system that's going to be in a state of good repair for our children and grandchildren. Because if you get behind on that, and if you look at legacy cities like Boston and Chicago and even Washington, D.C., those systems have such severe backlog of capital repairs just to, for the current system, it's hard to catch up. And I think the way you catch up is by never falling behind. And I think that we now have a formula and a spreadsheet and a policy that supports those prudent use of funds.
Thank you. Senator Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Zelli, got a couple of questions. So I appreciate you have excess funds and you're going to send it back to the general fund. I appreciate that. That makes the job of getting a balanced budget out of here a little easier. We're still going to have a lot of work to do with a approximately $5 billion structural deficit. So my question kind of comes around to you're loaning money to MnDOT. First off, who's setting the interest rate, and why are we charging ourselves interest?
Chair Zelli.
Mr. Chair and Senator Barr, the way I think of interest is to kind of hold both sides harmless as to what the cost of money would be. So if, to the extent we had those funds in an interest-bearing account with low-risk investments like treasuries, that would yield an interest, and I know that MnDOT will benefit because the inflation cost indicators they have for highway construction is well in excess of that. So they will benefit by the use of funds more than their whatever modest interest rate there is. And I think that we would use whatever standard rate that is done between government entities, and I'm not sure what that is.
Senator Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Commissioner Zelli, so why not just do a grant? If you've got the money to lend, it's transit, so we could do these projects on time, early, save the cost of inflation, not fall behind on any maintenance or things like that, where you were just talking about, and not have to pay ourselves interest. If you have excess funds that you have the ability to loan, why not just grant them?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator, I remember when I was at MnDOT, I would talk a lot about the benefit of grants, because they're a wonderful thing for those that receive the grant. You don't have to pay them back. And then Governor Dayton kept saying, well, we use Garvey bonds. And I would always point out that in my 30 years of business, I've learned the difference between a grant and a loan. A loan, you generally have to pay back. And in this case, as the lender, we actually need those funds to help do the capital maintenance and some of the additional costs that we have later on. So we're not in a financial position to give a grant, because those funds have been programmed for our needs. It is really a timing difference. Our needs don't come for a few years, so rather than have the funds in an interest-bearing account waiting for when we need those funds. We thought that would be a kind of a innovative opportunity for the two sister agencies to work together to everybody save some funds, more than just the interest. And so it really is an issue of excess funds that are not being used. They're only a timing difference of when those funds are needed.
Senator Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Zelli, so slight shift here. Did I hear you say somewhere in there at about a $15 or $50 million bond request you had? I didn't quite catch the number.
It was 15, 1-5.
1-5, okay. So if you're going to borrow money on a bond request and then loan to MnDOT and get that back, why not just not loan this side and not borrow over here?
Chair Zelli, it's a variation on the question I answered yesterday.
Mr. Chair and Senator, we did have this question in a different forum yesterday, and there really are two different programs. I will say that a state support comes in the support of bonds, but they truly are a grant to that transit way. It's a general obligation bond of the state to support this capital projects, in this case, APRT Transit. Our operating funds, which are kind of the difference between operating and the capital cost, operating funds are ones that we have a need for, but not for a number of years, so we can advance the funds and get the funds back to keep going on our operations. So we kind of think of them as, even though it's money, it's one is a capital use, and then the other is kind of operating funds. And I don't know if that helps.
Senator Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I promise this last one. It's not really a question. It's just you're borrowing over here, you're loaning over here. We're going to borrow from the regional land acquisition so we can do something other than roads with it. It just seems like there's a whole lot of shifting and moving around of the same pot of money from here to here to here to try and make it look like we're actually balancing the budget when in actuality, we're not doing anything except just moving a whole lot of money. A lot of shifts.
We might need boxes and arrows or some sort of diagram to help us keep track of all the moving parts.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I completely understand. I will say that part of prudent management is understanding a balance sheet and how best to do that for everybody's benefit. And I think there are ways to do that. And it sounds a little... I completely empathize and understand how that might appear, but I think these are different programs that have been put in place for different purposes, and so we're trying to be smart about how we do that and be very transparent, so we're not trying to hide anything.
Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator, just the one other part I would say is we're trying to be responsive, too, as we have conversations across the region with our many partner municipalities and other organizations. And two of the things we hear the most often in this right-of-way acquisition fund, the loan acquisition fund, it's we need help in parks in ways that currently you are constrained to be able to help us. Can you help us? And so that's where that ask is coming from. And on the other one, it's construction harms small businesses and makes it difficult to see big things get implemented. Can you find ways to work across agency lines to implement programs more efficiently? And so it is confusing as we talk about different ways to think about how to use available resources, but we are trying to do this in ways that listen to the public that we're here to serve.
I have a question. On the right-of-way loan fund, which I understand is going to a different committee. I think it goes to either environment or state government. I'm not sure. But we wanted to bring it in here because it has an implication in nexus with transportation. How big is this program? How much is it used by local units of government? You know, how many units of government need some funds advanced for right-of-way acquisition sooner than they're able to necessarily do it on their own? And yeah, just what orders of magnitude are we talking about? Are we impinging this program in some way that's not positive, or does it make a ton of sense because it's not fully subscribed?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the program has ranged with a balance because it is a loan fund. It revolves, which loans are made to local governments and and then funds are paid back. So it's more of an opportunistic opportunity for local governments to move quickly when they see land opportunities. And generally, and in my experience, when a project ultimately is announced and it ripens into something that's more real, the speculators might come in, land prices go up. By the time you get into a foreclosure situation, it gets even more expensive. So the idea behind these funds was to not let that make it less affordable for local communities, to provide kind of an opportunity to loan the funds to the entity so they can be ready for it. And once it becomes a project, other funding sources come in place and these loans are paid back. So I'd say the balance of this program over the past, 7 or 8 years, 10 years, has been anywhere but from $15 million to like $40 million. I think it was very popular a number of years ago. I think communities have had other ways to get funds for that purpose. I have been told that we could open up this opportunity with the existing fund balances, and it wouldn't really take away any opportunities that cities are using for their highway land. This is initially was funded with a Met Council levy. We don't anticipate the need to put an additional levy given that it has a fund balance now. So maybe just open up the opportunities to use the existing fund balance in a more innovative way.
So thank you. I appreciate that. Have we heard from the metro cities or any of the regional stakeholders? Are they aware of this proposal? Sounds like some of the regional park agencies have been engaged in this conversation, but wondering, if the trade association that represents cities in the metro area participated in this conversation writ large.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think it has been supported. I personally have had been before a couple of different county boards and commissioners because we've done kind of meetings to hear their concerns. This has come up. And of course, some counties manage parks as well, have very close to their local constituents. And I believe Metro Cities has been supportive.
Thank you. And then on the matter, and maybe council or fiscal can help, I just can't quite remember where we are on we had some conversation earlier about capital maintenance, and we've relied on the regional levy to support bonds for, regional transit bonds that help us undertake some of our capital maintenance needs. Do we need to renew? I mean, it's like every couple of years we need to renew the authorization to issue regional transit bonds that are supported by a tiny levy at the metro. Did we make that permanent or extend it for 4 years? Do we have to come back this year and redo it? Do we know the status of that matter?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I believe we have authorization sufficient at this point to cover our capital needs over the next biennium and maybe longer. Generally, those funds are helpful to Met Council as the local match to federal capital grants for fleet equipment, buses, generally. And so those funds are helpful, but we believe we have enough now in place. And you never say it's never important because we look farther and farther out. It is an authorization, which is a small levy to cover a 20% cost of a much increasing cost of primarily buses. And I know there's some of our capital maintenance, but I think that's less of the use than the other.
Mr. O'Connor.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question about the RTC bonds, because they're one of those things that can at times be forgotten as part of our broader funding mix. They are calculated into the long-term funding mix of our long-range projections and runs. The authorization, as the chair stated, in the short term is not a significant concern, but I do want to just reiterate that as we get to the end of this decade and look out into future years, this remains an important funding stream at the council, and I appreciate your asking about it here today.
Thank you. Questions, members? All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, with that, members, we are concluded. I think Chair Jasinski wanted to mention a few things.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to announce that Dom Linetti's last Transportation Committee meeting is today. Unfortunately, we're going to lose Mr. Linetti, which I am deeply sorry for that, because I would like to keep him. I've had him 2.5 sessions, and I would like to keep many more, but he's chosen to take on a different role, and so I wish him the best luck. And anybody here nonpartisan, we are going to have pizza tomorrow at around 12 to 12:30 up in the second floor of the Republican side. We call it the bullpen. So you're welcome to join us for pizza that I'll be providing for everyone. So again, thanks for Dom's service, and we'll be missed. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, let me just say on behalf of our caucus, Dom, it's been fantastic working with you. Appreciate all of your hard work and your partnership and everything you've done. It's been great knowing you. And, of course, you know, you hail from Apple Valley grad. Your mom and I went to high school together. So, I guess we have a couple of Apple Valley grads. So. Okay, we're going to sing the Eagles fight song right now. So best wishes to you. Appreciate everything you've done. Anything else, members? With that, we are adjourned.